Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. On the show today, we have three stories from you guys.
Is that a lot?
I should think so. One comes from the Roosevelt Hotel. We have drama in the drama class, and the black-eyed kids are back.
Ron, I dislike those BEK stories. They're quite unsettling.
Agreed, British guy. They are. We also have a cuckoo bird who just might be a murderer. And we end the show with one of my favorite foods. So grab a beverage and listen to this 5-Minute Mystery.
Another 5-Minute Mystery.
This 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by... Please don't press that button. How many times have we heard it before? This story shows us why you should never press that button. Just don't do it. Yes, this was a community service bulletin of a sort.
And so Johnny Raymond and his organ bring to a close the first program of his new radio series. This is your announcer, James Van Dorn, saying good night to you all.
Gentlemen, please. Quiet. That's better. Now, Mr. Horton, you're the director of this show. Would you tell me in your own words exactly what happened when Van Dorn died?
Well, Inspector, it was toward the end of the program. Van Dorn reached for the button to put the studio off the air, and then he just gasped and fell to the floor.
I see. Where were the rest of you when this happened?
Well, Taylor and I were in the control room, and Johnny Raymond was at the organ.
Are you Taylor?
That's right. I'm the studio engineer.
Did you notice anything peculiar during the program?
No, sir. I was in the control room most of the time.
Most of the time?
Well, except for the few minutes when I went into the studio to check the equipment just before going on the air.
You noticed nothing out of the ordinary?
No, sir.
How about you, Raymond?
Well, I was at the organ singing during the whole show.
And you didn't see anything either?
No. Mr. Van Dorn just pushed a button and... then collapsed.
Let's take a look at this button. Which one was it, Mr. Raymond?
Well, I wouldn't know. Kind of new around here.
It's this black one here, Inspector. It puts the studio off the air when you... Oh!
What happened, Mr. Horton?
Well, I don't know. Something pierced my finger.
Pierced your finger? Yeah, let me see. What do you know about this?
What is that?
Hey, look here. A little pin sticking out of this button.
A little pin?
Yes, and that's not all. You see this stain on the lower half of this pin? If my guess is right, this pin's been dipped in poison.
But what does it mean?
It means that Van Dorn didn't just die, but was murdered.
Murdered?
But how?
Simple. When Van Dorn went to switch the studio off the air, he stuck his finger on the pin and died immediately.
Incredible.
But that means anyone could have slipped in here and put that pin there.
Hey, you're wrong there, Mr. Horton. It means that one of you three put that pin there.
One of us?
Yes, Horton.
Who?
You, Mr. Taylor. You're under arrest for the murder of James Van Dorn.
How did the inspector know it was Taylor who murdered Van Dorn? We'll give you the solution in just a moment, but first...
I told you that you should never press the button. As FFMs go, this one wasn't too bad. However, there was one glowing problem. Why didn't Mr. Horton die when he pressed the button? Even the detective noted the stain on the pin used. I guess it could have been wiped clean. Let's go find out.
And now for the solution.
I murdered Van Dorn. Why, you're crazy.
Am I? You said you went out to check all the equipment. If someone else had put the pin on that button, you would have noticed it.
Well, one of the others could...
No, Taylor. It couldn't have been Raymond or Horton. Raymond's new in the radio business and knew nothing about the board or anything else about this studio. Remember, this was his first radio show. If it had been Horton, he wouldn't have accidentally stuck his finger on it just now. No, Taylor. You were the only possible one. Now, you better get ready to march. We're going to headquarters.
Okay, the mystery remains as to why Horton didn't fall dead as well. The good news is that the logic is sound. Now all the detective has to do is find the motive and the opportunity. Good show, though. This 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by... Please, don't press the button. I say we have an email from Todd Flores, who lives somewhere in New Mexico. Todd writes, Ron, best podcast ever. I love the fact that you have a no replay rule, but I do think it's okay to take a week off from time to time. Things happen, and we don't want you to burn out. Just my opinion, Todd. Well, Todd, thank you for your comment. You make a very good point. I don't know what it is about me, I just can't stop making podcasts. I have so many ideas that float around in my head, and getting them out to you guys is, well, cathartic. My rule of no replays is simple. Why put something out that you can just go online and listen to? Now, I do believe in the best of moments, and I have started to do this to help me get some time off. Also, special shows like we had on Thanksgiving allowed me to spend the week looking for a new car and spend quality time with my family. We have a second email from Jerry Bryant. Sorry, I don't know where Jerry is from, but he writes, Ron, I just found the archives for your show on archive.org. What's the story that goes with that? Why not have all your shows in one place? Jerry. Well, that's another great question. When I first started the podcast in 2011, I opened it with a different service provider. While I'll not say who that was, it became pretty clear that they weren't very good at what they did. In fact, today they only provide websites. Changes at iTunes forced me to move the podcast to a compatible platform. I chose Libsyn, and I have not regretted that since. At that time, they had a per meg charge to move the show to its new home. I'm basically cheap, so I decided to move about 50 episodes and donate the rest of them to the public domain. Exactly 100 shows. So that means that you can listen to the first 100 episodes at archive.org/details/archived-RAS-episodes. Now, I'm guessing you don't want to try to remember that, so I do have the link in every show note that I've put out since. So just go there and you will find the link to the first 100 episodes. I want to thank Jerry and Todd for their questions. Now, one comment that I get all of the time is, I want to help with the show. Well, there are three things that you can do to help with Ron's Amazing Stories. The first is to send me your stories. I love them, people want to hear them, and you want to tell them. It's obvious. So that's one way you can help. But you can also help so much if you just tell your friends, hey, I listen to Ron's Amazing Stories, and I like it. It's a really good podcast. That would help tremendously. The third thing that you can do to help the show is wherever you're listening, whether it's iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, wherever you listen, if you could just take a minute and leave some feedback or give the show 5 stars if you love it, 1 star if you hate it, whatever, those reviews really help make the show grow. Now, 1-star reviews may not help so much, so don't do that. Anyway, I've talked enough for today, so let's move on with this message from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you listen to, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? The Legend of Drizzt, The Collected Stories. One of my favorite authors of all time has to be R.A. Salvatore. In fact, he's been on the podcast, and you can listen to that interview in episode number 314. He has helped create a fantasy world like none other in what is called the Forgotten Realms. My favorite character of his? No question, Drizzt Do'Urden. The Legend of Drizzt expands upon the epic life of the Dark Elf with 12 tales performed by the all-star cast of Felicia Day, Dan Harmon, Greg Grunberg, Tom Felton, Danny Pudi, Sean Astin, Melissa Roach, Ice-T, Will Wheaton, Weird Al Yankovic, Michael Klickus, and David Duchovny. The work that these great actors have put in on this show that they, too, care just a little bit about Salvatore's lifetime work. Here is a brief sample of what you can expect from this book.
"You got it all?" asked the stocky young dwarf, his hand stroking his still hairless cheeks and chin. The two smaller dwarves, Cardrin and York, nodded and dropped their large sacks, the clanging as the bundles struck the stone floor, echoing through the stillness of the deep caverns. "Quiet, will ye?" snapped Feldegar, the fourth member of the conspiracy. "Garim'd have our heads if he knew." "Garim'll know well enough when we're done," said Brunner, the stocky dwarf, with a sly wink and a smile that eased the sudden tension. "Sort it out, then. No time for wasting." Cardrin and York began fishing through the assorted pieces of armor and weapons in the sacks. "Got you the foaming mug?" Cardrin said proudly, handing Brunner a shining shield. "Me father's own." Brunner laughed, marveling at the stealth and nerve his younger cousins had shown. He slid the heavy shield onto his arm and took up the newly crafted axe that he had brought, wondering, in sudden seriousness, if he was worthy to bear the shield emblazoned with the foaming mug, the standard of Clam Battlehammer.
For years, The Legend of Drizzt has included short stories published in the Forgotten Realm anthologies and, of course, Dragon Magazine. Available here for the first time in audio are all those classic stories by the New York Times bestselling author, R.A. Salvatore. From the startling origin of Drizzt's panther companion to the tale of Antares' first encounter with the Dragon Sisters, these tales are the stories that help shape the character of Drizzt Do'Urden by exploring the backstories of side characters and magical locations. Do you want to experience these wonderfully read tales? You can have this book today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. Audible is offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free book today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. And you can get your free audiobook today. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
first story comes from the great city of Los Angeles, California, and was sent in by Belinda Sparks. Hello, Ron. I know how much you love a good head-scratcher, and I have one for you. My boyfriend, Mateo, and I had a real experience one night while we were staying at the Hollywood Roosevelt. It's one of the more famous places in the city, and it had always been a dream of mine to stay there. My guy gave me one night for my birthday. We stayed in one of their cabana suites, close to the famous Marilyn Monroe suite. We had a wonderful evening and could not believe just how luxurious everything was. I knew that it had to be expensive, but I didn't care. It was something that I will never forget. Eventually, we got tired and decided to call it a night. I was sleeping in the amazing bed, and my boyfriend was on the couch. I was awoken by the sound of a trumpet. It was very strange, so I called out to Mateo and asked if he'd heard it. But he was dead to the world. I got up and walked around the room. Nothing. The Bose stereo was turned off, and the huge TV was silent. I shook Mateo awake and told him what had happened. He said it was probably just a guest and not to worry about it. I went back to bed and was just about asleep when I heard it again. This time, Mateo was awake and he heard it too. We searched around the room, outside hall, and the cabana balcony and could not find the source. We were about to give up when it played one last time. This time, it had a sad jazz sound to it. I called down to the main desk to ask about it. They said it probably just came up from the jazz club down the street. We doubted that because we were pretty high up from street level. Some might have been scared by what we heard, but to me, that just made the whole experience that much more enjoyable. Belinda Sparks, Los Angeles, California. What a great story. But would you like to hear the rest of the story? I did some research on the Hollywood Roosevelt. Not only was it the home to Marilyn Monroe, where legend has it her ghost still haunts her old stomping grounds, there's a famous mirror in the lobby where people take pictures and claim that they can see Marilyn's reflection. But that's not all. On the ninth floor, you can hear late actor Montgomery Clift, who lived in Suite 928 for 3 months while filming From Here to Eternity, practicing on his trumpet. Guests have asked the hotel staff to tell the person in the next room to stop playing in the middle of the night. However, the room was actually vacant at the time. Creepy? Yeah, I would say that is. Thank you for your story, Belinda. This story was sent into the show several months back. It was sent without any contact information other than a reference to Texas. I have no idea where it came from. I ran it through my plagiarism checker and found that it had been posted no less than 7 times on the internet, with a 72% accuracy rate. One time with a different dog name, another time from a person named Adrian, and yet another during Christmas. My guess is that this story is a complete work of fiction, or perhaps folklore. Hey, maybe it's even true. The story was written poorly, so I revised it, and I read it to you now. I do not offer any proof that it is real, but it is a pretty good story, and it goes like this. Let me preface this by saying I'm no means a writer, just a domestic engineer living in North Texas. Also, I don't believe in the paranormal, ghosts, demons, aliens, whatever. However, I did have an event that happened to me on Halloween that I have to admit has me scratching my head. It had been a slow trick-or-treat night in our neighborhood that evening, which is pretty odd in itself. We usually have kids from different areas drop off in ours and have a constant parade at our door. On this night, I'd say we'd had no more than 8 to 10 groups come by the entire evening. It was about 9:30 p.m., and my husband and I were sitting in our family room watching one of those ghost shows based on supposedly actual events. Like I said, I don't believe in that stuff, but I do like a good ghost story now and again, and it was Halloween after all. We hadn't had any activity at our door for over half an hour, and it was getting pretty late, so we decided to turn the porch light off and let our dog Chloe out of her crate. Chloe is an American bulldog and is very docile. We only put her in her crate because we were afraid she'd try to get out to play with all the kids, and I didn't want to have to chase her down the street. Also, we didn't want her to scare any of the little kids because she can look pretty intimidating if she wanted to. I turned the outside light off, let Chloe out, and she followed me back to the couch. Then she stopped for a minute, sniffed the air, deciding that all was well, she laid down at my feet. It was getting close to 10 p.m. when my husband decided he'd had enough fun for the night and was going to go upstairs, take a shower, and get ready for bed. After all, it was a Thursday, and he still had to get up early the next day. Our teenage son was out with his friends at a local haunted house and wasn't expected back for another hour or so. So that left me alone on the couch with Chloe. Now, just because I don't believe doesn't mean these shows don't freak me out just a bit. And being alone, now watching, I'd have to say I was kind of on edge, as it were. It wasn't long after I heard the upstairs water for the shower turn on, and there came a light knock at the front door. My initial reaction was, "What the heck? Really? It's almost 10 p.m. Go home." But then an uneasy feeling came over me. Why the knock? Our doorbell glows in the dark, and without the porch light, it would be extra obvious to anyone there. I paused, but I really couldn't just ignore it. Our front door has a big beveled glass panel, and anyone right at the door would see someone was in the family room watching TV. It would be pretty rude of me to just sit there and not answer it. Again from the front door, I glanced down at Chloe and she was gone. My gaze followed her normal path that she would take to the door, expecting her to be on her way as she normally does. She wasn't there. I stood up to look around the room and found her crouching at the kitchen entrance like she was wanting out. However, she never asks to go out like that. She always comes, licks my hand, or puts her head on my knee. This was totally out of character for her, and I have to say it heightened my anxiety. "Chloe," I said, "crate." She turned to look at me like, "Heck no, lady, I ain't moving." I yelled up to my husband, but he was already in the shower, so I knew that there was no chance of him hearing me. About that time, a car drove down our street and cast enough light on the door to where I could see the silhouettes of two small children through the glass. I instantly felt relieved. It was just some kids, probably a couple of my neighbors on their way back home, that wanted to stop by to show me their costume or something. I headed to the door and looked back to make sure Chloe wasn't going to follow. I need not have worried. What a great watchdog, I thought to myself, as she just sat there. I turned on the porch light and got to the door, and sure enough, I could see through the glass that it was just a couple of pretty small kids. A little late for such young ones, I thought, and began to wonder about what kind of parents would let their kids run the streets that late at night. I only opened the door enough to where I could block Chloe's escape if she decided to charge. What struck me immediately was how odd was it that the kids weren't wearing any costumes. They were in normal street clothes. No customary trick-or-treat, either. I began to feel very uneasy again. It was a girl and a boy. The girl to my left was older, I'd say 11 or 12.
I could see that she was blonde, but I couldn't make out any distinct features. Our lights are from high above and on columns at the front of the porch, so most of the light was coming from behind them. I had not opened the door wide enough for any of the light from inside to hit them directly. The boy was younger and about a foot shorter. I'd say he was 8 or 9 and looked like he had light brown hair. The girl very politely spoke up.
"Ma'am, can we please come inside and use your phone to call our mom?"
As she spoke, I had a feeling in the pit of my stomach that was telling me something was wrong. What kid, even at that age, doesn't have a cell phone on them these days? I couldn't remember the last time anyone had asked to use my home phone. "Hun, don't you have a phone of your own that you can call your mom on?" I asked. This is when things got real weird. Both kids turned to look at each other like they were going to say something to one another, but neither of them spoke. They both looked back at me, and the girl said,
"Ma'am, my cell phone battery doesn't have any charge left in it. Can we please come inside and call our mother? We're alone, and my brother is so scared."
I have to admit, there were two competing feelings inside of me. The first was that of a mother's heart, and I wanted to help these two children get to their mom. The other, a sinking fear in my gut that was keeping my feelings at bay. It was then that I noticed, during the short conversation, that I had already opened the door a few extra inches, of which I was completely unaware of doing. I stopped. "Honey, why don't you give me your mother's number and I can call her myself?" Another pause, and they looked at each other again. After a short moment, they turned back to me, and the girl said,
"Ma'am, my little brother has to use your bathroom. Can we please come in while you call our mom?"
And with that last statement, the little girl moved closer to the door, like she was just going to walk on right by me. As she did, she stepped into the light, coming from inside of the house, and I got my first real good look at her. Solid, jet black eyes. And that's all I could see. The motherly instinct was gone and replaced by terror that I don't think I've ever felt in my life. I could feel every hair on my arms and the back of my neck standing at attention. I closed the door to where just my face was able to stick out. The little girl stopped and again pleaded,
"Please, ma'am, we're really scared alone out here, and we have to come inside. Please help us."
Then, like on cue, both kids began to cry and whimper. It was then that the fear took over me, and I shut and locked the door.
"I'll call your mom if you give me the number,"
I shouted through the door.
"But I'm not letting you into my house."
I could see them stand there on the porch, just looking through the beveled glass at me. Part of me wanted to run upstairs to my husband, but the bigger part didn't want to lose track of where they were. That would have freaked me out even more to not know where they were. After what seemed like forever, but was probably just a few seconds, I decided to call my neighbor that lives across the street. I made my way to the couch to grab my phone, and I glanced back at the door, and I saw a shadow figure standing there. It looked like dark smoke, and then quickly faded. When I got to my phone, I started to look for my neighbor's contact information. I glanced up again and watched as the kids stepped away from the porch and walked towards the street. I went to the door to get a better look at where they went. I could see that the kids were still standing there under the street lamp near my house, and they were staring at me. I dialed my neighbor and lifted the phone to my ear. Only then did the kids start walking down our street. I met my neighbor under the lamp, but the kids were nowhere to be found. I went back inside, and I couldn't find Chloe anywhere. My husband came downstairs and could tell something was wrong. I quickly told him what had happened. We searched around together and finally found the dog under our bed, whimpering. Like I said, I don't believe in any of this stuff, and I've never heard of black-eyed kids before this. What I really think, what I have to think, is that these kids were just out yanking people's chains on Halloween night. But I will say this for them. They were good. Really good. They scared the crap out of me and my dog. Posted to the website anonymously. Well, that story, and as crazy as it sounds, feels pretty real to me. What did you think? I debated whether to share this one for a long time. Since it has been posted so many times across the internet, I'm not worried about copyright issues. The most recent post was in December of 2018, and it had a decidedly Christmas feel to it. I chose to go with the Halloween version. Is any of this story true? You know, I have always said that there's always a little truth in every story. If you are the author of this story and want to tell us what really happened, feel free to write me at ronsamazingstories@gmail.com. We want to know you and hear the rest of the story. Our last story comes from Jessica Edwards, who writes to us from New York. Hello, Ron. Thank you for your podcast. I love it. I heard you ask for stories, any stories, so here is mine. It isn't scary, a head-scratcher, or even very long, but it is true. I call it drama in the drama class. One time my drama class teacher had gone home sick, so we were put into a classroom with a movie to entertain us for the period. During the movie, an alarm went off. None of us were sure if it was the fire alarm or the lockdown alarm. So we headed out into the hall to check, and there was no one out there, so we headed back in and climbed under our desk as per lockdown procedure. Cut to an hour or so later when a teacher burst in and nearly dies of relief. You see, the school was actually on fire, and we were the only students not accounted for, and half the faculty and fire department had been searching for us for ages. Literally, the whole school had filled with smoke, while we kept super safe under our wooden desks. Jessica Edwards, New York. Well, Jessica, I'm very glad that you were safe and sound. Perhaps your school should think about making changes to the alarms to make sure everyone can tell the difference. Thank you for your amazing story. Our featured story this week comes from the January 1954 issue of Fantastic Universe. Do you believe in the magic of the cuckoo clock? Many say that the clock has a life of its own. But what if the cuckoo doesn't like you? Beyond the Door is a short story by Philip K. Dick. The plot follows a cuckoo clock, which may or may not be intelligent.
Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick. Larry Thomas bought a cuckoo clock for his wife without knowing the price he would have to pay. That night, at the dinner table, he brought it out and set it down beside her plate. Doris stared at it, her hand to her mouth. "My God, what is it?" She looked up at him, bright-eyed. "Well, open it." Doris tore the ribbon and paper from the square package with her sharp nails, her bosom rising and falling. Larry stood watching her as she lifted the lid. He lit a cigarette and leaned against the wall.
"A cuckoo clock!" Doris cried. "A real old cuckoo clock like my mother had!" She turned the clock over and over. "Just like my mother had when Pete was still alive!" Her eyes sparkled with tears.
"It's made in Germany," Larry said. After a moment he added, "Carl got it for me wholesale. He knows some guy in the clock business. Otherwise, I wouldn't have..." He stopped. Doris made a funny little sound. "I mean, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to afford it," he scowled. "What's the matter with you? You've got your clock, haven't you? Isn't that what you want?"
Doris sat holding onto the clock, her fingers pressed against the brown wood. "Well?" Larry said. "What's the matter?" He watched in amazement as she leapt up and ran from the room, still clutching the clock. He shook his head. "Never satisfied. They're all that way. Never get enough." He sat down at the table and finished his meal. The cuckoo clock was not very large. It was handmade, however, and there were countless frets on it, little indentations and ornaments scored in the soft wood. Doris sat on the bed, drying her eyes and winding the clock. She set the hands by her wristwatch. Presently, she carefully moved the hands to 2:10. She carried the clock over to the dresser and propped it up. Then she sat waiting, her hands twisting together in her lap, waiting for the cuckoo to come out, for the hour to strike. As she sat, she thought about Larry and what he had said, and what she had said too, for that matter, not that she could be blamed for any of it. After all, she couldn't keep listening to him forever without defending herself. You had to blow your own trumpet in the world. She touched her handkerchief to her eyes suddenly. Why did he have to say that? About getting it wholesale? Why did he have to spoil it all? If he felt that way, he needn't have got it in the first place. She clenched her fists. He was so mean, so damn mean. But she was glad of the little clock sitting there ticking to itself, with its funny grilled edges and the door. Inside the door was the cuckoo, waiting to come out. Was he listening, his head cocked on one side, listening to hear the clock strike so that he would know to come out? Did he sleep between hours? Well, she would soon see him. She could ask him. And she would show the clock to Bob. He would love it. Bob loved old things, even old stamps and buttons. He liked to go with her to the stores. Of course, it was a little awkward, but Larry had been staying at the office so much, and that helped. If only Larry didn't call up sometimes to... There was a whir. The clock shuddered, and all at once the door opened. The cuckoo came out, sliding swiftly. He paused and looked around solemnly, scrutinizing her, the room, the furniture. It was the first time he had seen her, she realized, smiling to herself in pleasure. She stood up, coming towards him shyly. "Go on," she said. "I'm waiting." The cuckoo opened his bill. He whirred and chirped, quickly, rhythmically. Then, after a moment of contemplation, he retired, and the door snapped shut. She was delighted. She clapped her hands and spun in a little circle. He was marvelous, perfect. And the way he had looked around, studying her, sizing her up, he liked her. She was certain of it. And she, of course, loved him at once, completely. He was just what she had hoped would come out of the little door. Doris went to the clock. She bent over the little door, her lips close to the wood. "Do you hear me?" she whispered. "I think you're the most wonderful cuckoo in the world." She paused, embarrassed. "I hope you'll like it here." Then she went downstairs again, slowly, her head high. Larry and the cuckoo clock really never got along well from the start. Doris said it was because he didn't wind it right, and it didn't like being only half-wound all the time. Larry turned the job of winding over to her. The cuckoo came out every quarter hour and ran the spring down without remorse, and someone had to be ever after it, winding it up again. Doris did her best, but she forgot a good deal of the time. Then Larry would throw his newspaper down with an elaborate, weary motion and stand up. He would go into the dining room where the clock was mounted on the wall over the fireplace. He would take the clock down, and making sure he had his thumb over the little door, he would wind it up. "Why do you put your thumb over the door?" Doris asked once. "You're supposed to." She raised an eyebrow. "Are you sure? I wonder if it isn't that you don't want him to come out while you're standing so close." "Why not?" "Maybe you're afraid of him." Larry laughed. He put the clock back on the wall and gingerly removed his thumb. When Doris wasn't looking, he examined his thumb. There was still a trace of the nick cut out of the soft part of it. Who, or what, had pecked at him? One Saturday morning, when Larry was down at the office working over some important special accounts, Bob Chambers came to the front porch and rang the bell. Doris was taking a quick shower. She dried herself and slipped into her robe. When she opened the door, Bob stepped inside grinning. "Ha!" he said, looking around. It's all right. Larry's at the office. Fine. Bob gazed at her slim legs below the hem of the robe. How nice you look today. She laughed. Be careful. Maybe I shouldn't let you in after all. They looked at one another, half amused, half frightened. Presently, Bob said, If you want, I'll... No, for God's sake. She caught hold of his sleeve. Just get out of the doorway so I can close it. Miss Peters across the street, you know. She closed the door. And I want to show you something, she said. You haven't seen it. He was interested. An antique or what? She took his arm, leading him towards the dining room. You'll love it, Bobby. She stopped, wide-eyed. I hope you will. You must. You must love it. It means so much to me. He means so much. He? Bob frowned. Who is he? Doris laughed. You're jealous. Come on. A moment later, they stood before the clock, looking up at it. He'll come out in a few minutes. Wait until you see him. I know you two will get along just fine. What does Larry think of him? They don't like each other. Sometimes when Larry's here, he won't come out. Larry gets mad if he doesn't come out on time. He says...
Says what?
Doris looked down. He always says he's been robbed, even if he didn't get it wholesale. She brightened. But I know he won't come out because he doesn't like Larry. When I'm here alone, he comes right out for me, every 15 minutes, even though he really only has to come out on the hour. She gazed up at the clock. He comes out for me because he wants to. We talk. I tell him things. Of course, I'd like to have him upstairs in my room, but it wouldn't be right. There was the sound of footsteps on the porch. They looked at each other, horrified. Larry pushed the front door open, grunting. He set his briefcase down and took off his hat. Then he saw Bob for the first time.
Chambers, I'll be damned.
His eyes narrowed.
What are you doing here?
He came back into the dining room. Doris drew her robe around her helplessly, backing away.
Bob began. That is, we...
He broke off, glancing at Doris. Suddenly, the clock began to whir. The cuckoo came rushing out, bursting into sound. Larry moved towards him.
Shut that din off, he said.
He raised his fist towards the clock. The cuckoo snapped into silence and retreated. The door closed.
That's better.
Larry studied Doris and Bob, standing mutely together.
I came over to look at the clock, Bob said. Doris told me that it's a rare antique and that... Nuts. I bought it myself.
Larry walked up to him.
Get out of here.
He turned to Doris.
You too. And take that damn clock with you.
He paused, rubbing his chin.
No. Leave the clock here. It's mine. I bought it and paid for it.
In the weeks that followed after Doris left, Larry and the cuckoo clock got along even worse than before. For one thing, the cuckoo stayed inside most of the time, sometimes even at 12 o'clock, when he should have been busiest. And if he did come out at all, he usually only spoke once or twice, never the correct number of times. And there was a sullen, uncooperative note in his voice, a jarring sound that made Larry uneasy and a little angry. But he kept the clock wound, because the house was very still and quiet, and it got on his nerves not to hear someone running around, talking and dropping things. And even the whirring of the clock sounded good to him. But he didn't like the cuckoo at all, and sometimes he spoke to him.
Listen, he said late one night to the closed little door. I know you can hear me. I ought to give you back to the Germans. Back to the Black Forest.
He paced back and forth.
I wonder what they're doing now, the two of them. The young punk and his books and his antiques. A man shouldn't be interested in antiques. That's for women, he set his jaw. Isn't that right?
The clock said nothing. Larry walked up in front of it.
Isn't that right? He demanded. Don't you have anything to say?
He looked at the face of the clock. It was almost 11, just a few seconds before the hour.
All right. I'll wait until 11. Then I want to hear what you have to say. You've been pretty quiet the last few weeks since she left.
He grinned wryly.
Maybe you don't like it here since she's gone, He scowled. Well, I paid for you, and you're coming out whether you like it or not. You hear me? 11 o'clock came. Far off, at the end of town, the great tower clock boomed sleepily to itself. But the little door remained shut. Nothing moved. The minute hand passed on, and the cuckoo did not stir. He was someplace inside the clock beyond the door, silent and remote. All right, if that's the way you feel, Larry murmured, his lips twisting. But it isn't fair. It's your job to come out. We all have to do things we don't like. He went unhappily into the kitchen and opened the great gleaming refrigerator. As he poured himself a drink, he thought about the clock. There was no doubt about it. The cuckoo should come out, Doris or no Doris. He had always liked her from the very start. They had got along well, the two of them. Probably he liked Bob, too. Probably he had seen enough of Bob to get to know him. They would be quite happy together, Bob and Doris and the cuckoo. Larry finished his drink. He opened the drawer at the sink and took out the hammer. He carried it carefully into the dining room. The clock was ticking gently to itself on the wall. Look, he said, waving the hammer. You know what I have here? You know what I'm going to do with it? I'm going to start on you first, he smiled. Birds of a feather, that's what you are, the three of you. The room was silent. Are you coming out? Or do I have to come in and get you? The clock whirred a little. I hear you in there. You've got a lot of talking to do. Enough for the last 3 weeks. As I figure it, you owe me... The door opened. The cuckoo came out fast, straight at him. Larry was looking down, his brow wrinkled in thought. He glanced up, and the cuckoo caught him squarely in the eye. Down he went, hammer and chair and everything hitting the floor with a tremendous crash. For a moment, the cuckoo paused, its small body poised rigidly. Then it went back inside its house. The door snapped tight shut after it. The man lay on the floor, stretched out grotesquely, his head bent over to one side. Nothing moved or stirred. The room was completely silent, except, of course, for the ticking of the clock. I see, Doris said, her face tight. Bob put his arm around her, steadying her. Doctor, Bob said, can I ask you something? Of course, the doctor said. Is it very easy to break your neck, falling from so low a chair? It wasn't very far to fall. I wonder if it might not have been an accident. Is there any chance it might have been... a suicide? The doctor rubbed his jaw. I never heard of anyone committing suicide that way. It was an accident, I'm positive. I don't mean suicide, Bob murmured under his breath, looking up at the clock on the wall. I meant something else. But no one heard him. End of Beyond the Door by Philip K. Dick. Recording by Ian Bradford.
Well, what did you think of that story? I thought that if I had a cuckoo clock, I just might set it inside the closet out of harm's way. Of course, a clock is just a clock until it isn't. Our story today was brought to you by Gladys Goodies, good treats for your dog to eat, and was read for us by Ian Bradford. Thank you, Ian, and thank you, Gladys Goodies.
I'm Glady, the dachshund, the face of Glady's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag and pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladysGoodies.com.
Forget to use our very own promo code RONS to get your 20% discount on all your purchases. That is RONS. One thing I can't get enough of is old-time radio commercials. These always make me smile, and I hope they do for you as well. I'm also a big fan of the American hot dog, so an OTR ad from Armor Hot Dogs would really hit the spot right now, don't you think? Here's one from 1957.
Hot dog, Armor Hot dog. What kinds of kids eat Armor Hot dog? Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs.
The dog kids love to bite. Picking it up on the old banjo, put on the mustard and away we go. When kids fight dogs, they yell,
"Hooray for hot dogs!
Armor hot dogs!
The dogs kids love to fight."
Now, if you excuse me, I'm going to go get me a hot dog. An Armor hot dog. You know, the dogs Ron's like to eat. Herein ends episode number 413. I want to thank Todd Flores, Jerry Bryant, Belinda Sparks, our anonymous poster, Jessica Edwards, and Ian Bradford for taking part in the show today. You are all my sunshine. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find an amazing number of links that should fit every need. Also, please remember to leave feedback and ratings for the podcast. The more they know, the more we grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.